At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Two words to start us off today: how and zing. Housing in this economy? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 17th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You, I'm sure as well as I could, can tick off on your fingers the economic currents running against real estate right now. We list them all the time: rising mortgage rates, still high home prices, low inventories, and a whole crop of current owners not motivated to sell and thus give up their not 7% mortgages. So this morning's news from the Commerce Department is worth a couple of minutes, we believe. Housing starts, that is, literally the number of new home construction projects begun, were up in April, 2.2% higher than in March. Still way down, yes, from where they were in absolute terms this time last year. But the recent bump in housing construction and in construction permits issued, too, I should say, by the way, yeah, that does say a thing or two about this economy. Marketplace's Justin Ho starts us off.
Historically, around 11% of housing inventory has been new construction. But lately?
That share has increased to nearly 30% in recent months.
That's Odetta Kushi, deputy chief economist at First American. She says a lot of current homeowners would rather hold on to their 2 or 3% mortgages rather than sell and buy a new house at today's higher rates. As a result, there's a shortage of existing homes.
Builders are responding to that shortage and picking up the pace in construction,
especially in the southern part of the U.S.
If you're talking about just sheer volume, more than half of home building occurs in the south.
That's Robert Dietz, chief economist at the National Association of Home Builders.
Three of the top five single-family home building markets are located in Texas. Three of the top 10 are located in Florida.
Construction's also been picking up in the Mountain West, states like Utah, Nevada, and Idaho, where a lot of people moved early in the pandemic. Dietz says population growth in those states has slowed down more recently.
But the expectation is we will continue to see above-trend growth rates in those mountain states because they offer more affordable pathways to home ownership.
And compared to the West Coast and the Northeast, it's relatively easier to build homes in the Mountain West and the South, says Charlie Dougherty, senior economist at Wells Fargo.
There's a little bit more land. It's less expensive. You know, building regulations are not quite as strict.
But Dougherty says home builders still face plenty of challenges there. A lot of building materials are hard to come by, like electrical transformers. Skilled labor is in short supply, and land is getting more expensive.
With those sort of constraints, it makes it all the more challenging to profitably build at lower price points.
In other words, homebuilders will have to make more expensive homes for the cost of new construction to be worth it. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, traders did seem inspired that the debt limit talks haven't collapsed. Take your wins where you get them, I guess. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Kristen Schwab was telling us yesterday, she tried to make sense of all the mixed economic messages that are out there right now about how customers are cutting back on big ticket items. Today, what retailers are doing to bring shoppers back to those non-essentials, new furniture perhaps, or TVs. Case in point, Target. It warned investors on its earnings call this morning that it's going to have to be offering more discounts to bump its sales, a retail strategy we're seeing a lot. Actually, Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall is on that one.
When Flower Cifuentes went online to find the best price for a particular salt spray for her curly hair, she saw the product online at Ulta, and a $5 off promotion caught her eye.
I don't shop bougie Ulta, but I could they email me with the discount, so guess where I went yesterday?
She went to an Ulta store in Houston to get her salt spray, and she ended up buying some mousse, too.
While I was there, I spent more than I wanted to because I bought another product, too. But I only went because I had that coupon.
Retailers have increasingly been using discounts and promotions like this to encourage shoppers to keep spending, says Sonia Lipinski, a retail analyst with Alex Partners.
They're using them to lure them into the store in the hopes that they can then upsell them on additional products that might not be at such a level of discount.
She says retailers who cater to middle and low income shoppers are especially leaning on discounts since those are the consumers inflation is hitting the hardest. That includes stores known for their discounts, like Walmart, that may have additional reasons for slashing prices, says Mintel retail analyst Diana Smith.
They are trying to get rid of some of their excess inventory to better position themselves for the future.
But Smith says too many discounts can be bad for business. It can hurt a store's image long term, and
it does eat into bottom line profits. And retailers are already challenged right now because they're having to deal with the higher costs as well.
At the same time, Claire Tassin at Morning Consult says customers return to shops that cut them a deal during hard times.
And they feel like the retailers maybe doing the right thing for them in that moment, and that can help to build consumer trust.
And she says if a store isn't offering discounts, it could be the perfect time for a competitor to drop in with a coupon and steal away a loyal customer. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
We're still in the murky gray middle of the debt limit fight. Staffs are still talking. President Biden's going to come back early from the G7 to be in on the discussions. And House Republicans are still threatening the full faith and credit of the United States over budget negotiations. We are not, obviously, the only country with piles of debt. The United Kingdom, with a smaller and less robust economy, just saw its public debt top 100% of its GDP. That is, they owe more than their entire economy is worth, as do we, by the way. But the statisticians over in the Royal Treasury have come up with a new and not uncontroversial way to measure its debt. It's called public sector net worth, and in a kind of presto change-o way, it suggests the UK's public finances might not be in such bad shape after all, from London Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The new statistic slashes the level of UK public indebtedness down from an eye-watering $3.1 trillion to a more reassuring $750 billion. How? Let Martin Wheatcroft of the Institute of Accountants explain. It's by offsetting against the debt a whole swathe of publicly owned assets.
So that includes the highway network, it includes the railway network, which is government-owned in the UK, schools, hospitals, other forms of infrastructure.
This seems to make sense. After all, this is the way corporate or individual solvency is assessed, with assets balanced against liabilities.
That gives you a much more comprehensive view of the public finances because you're looking at the wider balance sheet.
But there are some questions about this additional way of looking at the national debt. Surely offsetting assets against liabilities only makes sense if those assets can in practice be sold off to pay down the debt. That, says former Conservative politician and economist Warwick Lightfoot, could in some cases prove hugely difficult politically.
If you sell a road to an operator who has a concession to run a monopoly road, there'll be a lot of arguments over the costs of the tariffs and the charging that takes place.
Now, it's true that the UK pioneered the privatisation of state-owned assets in the 1980s, but there are many assets included in the new metric that would be very difficult to sell or to value accurately.
A school, if you can knock it down and build housing on it, may be worth £200 million, but if its present use is as a school, it's going to be worth a lot less than that.
A bigger worry is that the new metric, public sector net worth, by reducing the appearance of indebtedness, may entice governments into borrowing a lot more, not to invest in worthwhile infrastructure, but to splurge. Carl Emerson of the Institute of Fiscal Studies.
If it leads governments to just think, oh, our position's healthier anyway, look at this new measure, it tells us everything's much, much better, we can just borrow more money, then I think it is much more questionable.
But supporters of the metric say governments will behave. British politicians learned a resounding lesson from the short-lived administration of Liz Truss last year. She tried to borrow to pay for tax cuts and swiftly came unstuck.
I want to be honest. This is difficult.
Her mini-budget caused meltdown in the bond market and within days she paid the price.
I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
The bond vigilantes are alive and well and watching UK government borrowing and spending like a hawk, regardless of the public sector net worth. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up.
You know, I snore, I don't snore. I Beatles, I'm a Rolling Stones person. I only listen to opera. I hate music.
Man, that's a tough list. The roommate compatibility test for aging boomers. Coming up, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's up 408 points, 1.25%. 33,420 for the blue chips. The Nasdaq moved up 157 points, almost 1.3%. 12,500 on the nose. The S&P 500 added 48 points, about 1.2%, finished at 41.58 there. TJX Companies, owner of TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Home Goods, added 0.9% on better-than-expected earnings and sales in the first quarter. It also issued a disappointing outlook because capitalism. Macy's jumped 5.7% today. Raw Stores grew 0.8%. Casino and hotel operator Wynn Resorts rolled up 5.6% after an upgrade from Barclays, which cited potential post-pandemic gains and the strength of Wynn's businesses in Las Vegas. MGM Resorts lifted 2.5%. Justin Ho was telling us about home builders. Well, here they are. KB Home and D.R. Horton up each 0.4% today. Lennar added almost 0.6%. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-notes, 3.57%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's been 6 months, give or take, since Beijing decided enough was enough with its zero COVID policy and started getting things back closer to normal. And since then, the Chinese economy's grown at an annualized rate of 4.5%, but it has been bumpy. There's another COVID wave expected. There's a more strained than usual relationship with the United States, and there is the war in Ukraine. Unemployment did fall a bit last month overall. 5.2% for April is the rate over there. But for Chinese young people, that is Chinese aged 16 to 24, unemployment is above 20%. Marketplace's Jennifer Peck has our story from the eastern city of Hangzhou.
Imagine it's the biggest holiday of the year. You're geared up to see family and friends, excited about all the food. Then your manager pulls you in for a chat. That's what happened to IT worker Cheng Shi just before the Lunar New Year in January.
They said the company was facing operational difficulties and they might need to adjust and optimize. I knew what they meant.
They meant that he would be out of a job soon. Cheng Shi says he wasn't all that surprised, what with new regulations and investigations into big tech and poor U.S.-China relations.
In Hangzhou, the IT sector has reached its peak. The pandemic just made the situation even worse.
He's too afraid to tell his parents he's been laid off. Further west, I'm on my way to meet a student. She beat millions of other candidates to get into one of China's top universities. She did not give her name because she says she's been monitored by her college and the police.
Hello, hi, hi, hi.
Over a tiramisu and coffee, she tells me how, even when her university city was no longer under lockdown, all the students were forced to stay on campus. And that was true at a lot of universities in China.
In case there was an infection on campus, I think the university didn't want to be held responsible.
She would sneak out to have a drink or catch a movie with friends. She got caught. Then the school pressured her roommates to report her if she left. The freshman attempted to take her own life. She says her school only pretends it cares about mental health.
The university organized an event asking students to post messages that have positive energy. The event was called Say No to Emo, emo being emotions. I felt like the school was depriving us of our right to be sad. Like if we're sad under these restrictions, it's our problem.
The college kept her under surveillance, tried to censor her on social media, and when she wanted to join protests last year against COVID restrictions, the university called and stopped her. She snuck off campus one more time before the school told her to defer her sophomore year. Now her parents are worried about her future job prospects, but she isn't.
I'm not that worried because I don't need to find a job that my parents consider stable. I could just as well work at a bar.
This attitude is referred to in China as laying flat, like opting out of the rat race. China's leaders see laying flat as a threat to the nation's economic future. Even tech billionaire Zhou Hongyi, someone as famous in China as Jack Ma is internationally, has criticized young people online for not wanting to put the effort in and having the wrong attitude towards work.
Young people shouldn't be so picky about their jobs.
But a comment below his video hits back. Once I'm 35, no one will want to hire me, so of course I need to find jobs that pay me well now. And age discrimination is a thing. Again, newly laid off worker Cheng Shi.
Frankly, companies think 35 and over is too old because they don't need as many workers as they used to. And last year's graduates plus this year's graduates means there are well over 10 million young people looking for work.
He says young workers are cheaper and have better health to handle the overtime that is baked into many sectors.
Age is a big obstacle in my job hunt. I'm turning 40 soon. Of course, I feel the pressure, but I don't want to think about this too much. I just need to keep my job search going.
Cheng Shi says he's applied to 100-plus jobs. Fewer than a third of the companies have replied so far. And he's secured zero job interviews. In Hangzhou City, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
The United States is, and by more than just a little bit, too, the world's biggest producer of natural gas. see also a decade and a half worth of fracking. But there are some signs a slowdown might be on the horizon. Marketplace's Lily Jamali covers energy for us.
To get an idea of what energy producers are thinking right now, one place to look is what's known as the forward curve, says Jacques Rousseau of Clearview Energy Partners.
There are companies that are willing to buy or sell oil or gas in the future at a certain price. If you're a producer, you're saying, well, what can I sell my gas for?
They could get $8 per unit a year ago, but prices have dropped to around $2.33 for natural gas to be delivered next month. And the projected price isn't set to crack $4 until December of next year. So
they're deciding to lay down some rigs and to produce less.
That's reflected in data from Baker Hughes, which builds and services drilling equipment. It says the number of natural gas exploration rigs fell by 16, the most in 7 years, to 141 rigs.
It is a good harbinger of supply declines potentially in the future.
Wood Mackenzie's Eugene Kim says it can take a few months before that starts showing up as softer production, but
it is significant in the sense that the rigs are falling off in areas where there's a lot of gas production growth.
Like the Haynesville Shale Formation, which spans parts of Louisiana, Texas, and Arkansas. Lower prices can discourage more drilling, says Patricia Schuker of the Colorado School of Mines.
I think part of it is the market is flooded with natural gas right now.
Even in Europe, which became a huge buyer of U.S. liquefied natural gas after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And
you have new players like Egypt, Israel, entering also the market against the U.S.
But the U.S. shale revolution is far from over. Ryan Kellogg of the University of Chicago says, with the exception of the early pandemic,
natural gas production has really done nothing but grow. And we're setting production records pretty much every year.
And he says that doesn't seem set to change soon. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
AARP says about 1 in 10 adults 50 or older live alone and don't have significant others or children. Loneliness and running out of money are among their top concerns. And as the baby boomers age, the number of older Americans living alone is going up. And that is the setup for the next installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
My name is Jane Ehrlich. I am a writer and business owner, and I am working on a startup that I've been working on for 12 years called Boomer Rumors. The story probably started in the late 50s when I was a child. We would go outside in the summer. I grew up in the Bronx, middle class neighborhood, and we would see rows of grannies mostly in deck chairs just sitting outside the apartment buildings. They all lived with their children. Previous to my generation, people lived at home until they were married. If they were lucky enough to go to college, they lived at home during college. My generation was the first generation that had the freedom to leave the nest, as it were. I saw people moving away from their families. I saw people getting married. I saw people getting divorced. And I really became aware of the issue of people living alone. My late parents were in New York. I lived in California for 14 years. It was really hard for them. It wasn't that hard for me. I could visit them, you know, talk to them, but it was very difficult. When I had lost both my parents, I realized how are my friends going to age? And we started talking about it. And it kind of just became more of a cohesive plan for this website. The concept of Boomer Rumors was to match people by their housing choices and their lifestyle. So you will say, gee, I'm a boomer and I would like to move to New York City, but I'd like to live in a condo, share a condo space with another boomer in New York City. And here are my lifestyle questions. You know, I snore, I don't snore. Beatles, I'm a Rolling Stones person. I only listen to opera. I hate music. We have always thought that Boomer Rumors could share a home health aide, an electrician, a driver to take them to medical appointments at that. But it's pooling resources to create a happy living experience in which people who are living alone longer can age in place with another person. That is the first priority. Second priority, I wanted to create a community. I want it to be a housing site with that potential for people meeting friends. I think it would help me enormously. I feel very lonely sometimes. I'm far away from my friends. And at the end of the day, I want to go dancing.
That was Jane Ehrlich. Dancing when she can, working on her startup as well. It's called Boomer Roomers in southwestern Connecticut. You can tell us about your adventure in housing. We'd love it if you did at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today in which, well, look, I'm just going to tell you and you decide. Uber announced today that you can get an Uber without using the app. You apparently just call them using the phone part of your phone. You can book it on demand or you can schedule it for later, which, and maybe I'm missing something here, but doesn't that just make it a taxi cab? All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. It's some new data from the Census Bureau. Census has a new survey it developed during the pandemic, just kind of keeping track of how we're doing financially. And the answer is not great. 38.5% of households in its most recent survey, which was late last month into early May, 38.5% said they faced difficulty paying for usual household expenses. That's up from 34% a year ago. And almost 27% in 2021. It's more than 89 million people when you add it all up. Our media production team, Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.